Welcome to the Daily Stoic Podcast, where each day we bring you a passage of ancient wisdom designed to help you find strength, insight, and wisdom in everyday life. Each one of these passages is based on the 2,000-year-old philosophy that has guided some of history's greatest men and women. For more, you can visit us at dailystoic.com. I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
It's funny, I try to, talking about discipline, I try to be very disciplined about how I do my stuff. So, like, I always want to be ahead of schedule, like, for the Daily Stoic, I write the daily email. I have never written that day's email, like, the day before. It's definitely not the day of, right? I'm usually, like right now, we're scheduled out through the end of September. Even the recordings, too. I always am chipping away. I'm trying to create a back catalog so I can make good choices, so the team can make good choices editorially about what we run. And so that's always been my attitude. Like, I just had to turn in a book to a project, and it was like a month and a half early. I never miss deadlines. That's how I am. That's how I think. That, to me, that's what discipline is. And when I say discipline, it's destiny. It's like, if you're that person, that helps you do good work. And it helps people count on you, and it helps you become what you're capable of doing. So if you want to pre-order Discipline's Destiny, please do. But the point is, I try to do things in advance, but this one accidentally was done so far in advance. I think I recorded this like back in April with DJ Eagle Bear Vanis, an enrolled member of the Ottawa Tribe of Michigan, a proud graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, a decorated Air Force captain, and a pivotal and renowned member of his tribal community, and also a best-selling author and a revered motivational speaker who has a new book with my same publisher, Portfolio Penguin. They reached out and asked if I wanted to have him on. And from the title alone, I knew it'd be a great conversation. The Warrior Within, Our Own Power to Serve, Fight, and Protect, and Heal. It's a great book. It highlights the tribal principles that led to the first cultures in America. It dives into the significance of tribal principles, how they're going to be applied to lead organizations with courage, find clarity in chaos, and serve your best regardless of your circumstances. He's been hosted by the White House, Fortune 500 companies, tribal nations, and now put together this wonderful book. You can go to his website, nativediscovery.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at DJ Vanis, V-A-N-A-S. But do check out the new book, which is out this month, The Warrior Within, Own Your Power to Serve, Fight, and Protect. Thank you, DJ, for agreeing to do this interview. Thank you for doing it months and months earlier and not saying a word. It was a scheduling confusion on my team's end. And we sat on it, and now we're putting it out because your book is out. Enjoy this, everyone. Talk soon. Well, I'm excited to talk. I thought we'd start. You have sort of a unique story. Where did you grow up? Your background's, I think, different than a lot of my guests.
I grew up all over. Originally from Michigan. Grew up in North Dakota, South Dakota. Spent a lot of my growing up years in Mississippi. And then joined the military. And so ended up in a bunch of different places after that as well.
Were your parents in the military?
My dad was 21 and a half years.
Yeah. What did he do?
He was avionics maintenance. So he actually flew on an air crew during the Cold War on RC-135s. And so he was TDY a lot. And then he ended up transferring out of that career and got into avionics maintenance, more ground-based. So sure. He wasn't gone all the time.
Did they want you to be in the armed forces? Was that their dream or was that your dream?
No, but when you grow up at the end of a runway, I mean, that's where, you know, I got really inspired to follow in those footsteps, because I just, you know, I was so fascinated by the whole concept of being in the military, flying in particular. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a pilot. And so it was kind of a natural, you know, alignment, at least for me.
There's kind of an it's like unsung or uncelebrated, and I would say unexpected, given the sort of realities of American history. But there is a pretty impressive tradition of Native Americans in the U.S. Armed Forces. Like, I was just reading Admiral Stavridis's book about Navy heroes, and I had no idea about Commander Ernest Evans, who was the first Native American to win the Medal of Honor. Like, it's weird that it there is this history, and it's one of maybe the few areas it's not that it's a bright spot, but it seems like something we should celebrate, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we have the highest rate of military service out of any ethnic group in America, and have for over 100 years. Because again, it's that warrior concept in reality, you know, it being able to exercise that. But it's one of those stories that I was proud to be a part of, because I got selected to be part of the PBS special, The Warrior Tradition. And that whole film was about telling that story. And so it was a big honor to be part of that, because that's something that, you know, I think is pretty special and needs to be told.
Yeah, it's both beautiful and tragic that sort of the groups that have been historically persecuted, when they are not persecuted and given an opportunity to succeed, they do so. I was just reading this other book about the Japanese soldiers in the Second World War that served out of the concentration camps. Is it the 422nd? I forget the name of it, but it's like the most decorated Italian in American history is the one that, by some, you know, standards, should have, you know, been required to sacrifice the least. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But it is this sort of beautiful reminder that, when you give people the opportunity to succeed, they succeed. And that the other way to think about that too is, like, think about what countries, America being at the forefront of them, have deprived themselves of by not availing themselves of this resource. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Because that was one of the reasons why we had such high service rates in World War I, is because that was a chance finally, you know, after all the big wars were over between, you know, tribes and the U.S. government. It was a chance for our people to prove their worth in this society, to be able to stand up and be proud of who they are and really, you know, kind of exercise again that warrior tradition in a different way and make a contribution to this nation. And so that was one of those really special, unique things. But yeah, it's almost like there's a chip on their shoulder, like there's something to prove. And yeah, the unit that you're talking about, a World War II, I read about them as well. And, you know, same with Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes.
It's, you know, when you have that, you know, kind of that almost like a chip on your shoulder, like you've really got something to step up for and prove, if not to anyone but yourself. Our Navajo Code Talkers are another great example of that. You know, fascinating story in and of itself.
Yeah. Robert Greene talks about the death ground strategy, sort of when it's not just you have something to prove, but also when there's very little to lose. Right. Because where are they going to go back? Right. It's tragic, of course, that they're in this terrible position. But if you think about why they would want to go do this thing, it's because all the other options have been closed to them. And it is kind of a forcing function towards, you know, channeling all of one's hopes and efforts towards this sort of singular avenue.
Right. Right. Makes you a dangerous asset.
Yeah. You know,
when you're pushed into a corner, that's when that warrior spirit really comes out, you know, because you do feel kind of, you know, painted into a corner, and that's, yeah.
Well, it's powerful, but volatile.
Definitely. It's got to be channeled the right way for sure. Because yeah, it can definitely go off the rails pretty fast, but at least to have that direction like that, being able to step up and be able to be of service, be able to make a contribution in that type of way, you know, really was remarkable.
So obviously you're sort of traveling around as a military brat as a kid, but what is your sort of tribal life at that time? Like what is it like growing up as you grew up? How are you immersed in these sort of traditions and ideas?
Yeah, I grew up always knowing who I was and where I came from, but I grew up away from my people. My tribe is based in Michigan. You know, home was where the Air Force sent us. But I always was connected to my culture. My grandma taught our traditional language. And this was back in the 70s, before a lot of the traditional languages started to come back. You know, we have this language renaissance in our tribal communities that began during that time. My grandma was a part of that. And so I was always kind of raised to understand, you know, to be proud of who I was and where I came from. But having that disconnect, was always tough. You know, every time I went back home and we visited, you know, I would get that reconnection again. But until I started actually, you know, my entire adult life, I've served Indian country. You know, I've worked with over 500 tribal communities, tribal nations in the last, you know, 25 plus years of my life. And so that's really where I got immersed and kind of at the big picture level too. So I was always, like I said, I knew my tribal background and history, but working as, you know, across the board with all different tribal communities is really what kind of keeps me connected in a much stronger way.
Yeah. How does that work? Like, because I have to imagine that part of the tribal community has always been a little bit, if not nomadic, but sort of spread out, right? So like, it's both you're away from it, but also it's everywhere, I have to imagine, right? Like the idea that it's rooted in a place is probably a tad more Western than natural. If I might be totally off base, but I have to imagine the tradition does account for a sort of a widespread or disbursement of people over an enormous amount of territory, because traditionally that's what it also was.
Yeah. And there was, and there is, you know, home turf, you know, there is a home base, you know, of course. I mean, it's just the place that we're from, the place that we're familiar with, but that's also true too, is that, you know, I feel like, you know, that cultural home is wherever I am.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the neat things about our tribe, you know, we got misnamed. It was a miscommunication, you know, that happened so frequently. You know, the French came in the early 1600s and, you know, discovered us, and they were impressed at what they saw. And we had this vibrant trade network set up using what made us famous, which were birch bark canoes. These things were, I mean, engineering brilliance. I mean, the hulls were less than a quarter of an inch thick. A canoe 18 feet long could weigh as little as 35 pounds, but they were strong, maneuverable, fast. And so when the French came and saw what we were doing, they were impressed and a little bit jealous too. You know, they came up to our people and they asked, you know, they're like, who are you? You know, we didn't understand their language. We thought they asked, what are you doing? So we answered in our language. We said, Odawa, which in our language means to trade. And they're like, Sacre bleu, you're be Odawa. And they wrote it down. We're like, no. But, you know, the ink dried. We've been known for that ever since. And I always think, what a goofy way to get named. You know, we call ourselves Anishinaabe, which means the people or first people. And, but the other, you know, kind of definition of Ottawa is the at home anywhere people.
Right.
And I always think of how, like, in alignment that is to the work that I do, you know, working with so many different tribal communities, Because that's probably about 70% of the work that I've done up to this point. The other 30% is, you know, government association, corporate, military, but 70% is in tribal communities. And I really feel like that when I go out and travel, as I feel like, you know, I'm a member of that at home anywhere people.
Yeah, at home anywhere is a nice encapsulation of sort of military culture, native culture, the writer speaker culture, where it's like you have to go and figure out your routine and figure out your life and figure out how to do what you do, even though you're in unfamiliar, you know, surroundings. And yet, I don't know about you, but a certain amount of time on the road, it all starts to feel the same also, right? The hotels are all the same. The cities are all the same.
Right.
You find a way to be at home anywhere. Even like I've only lived in, let's say, 5 or 6 cities, but I do have this sense that like the cities that I've lived in are larger. The number is larger because I've been to, I don't know, Chicago, however many dozens of times, even though I stay in a different place each time. I feel rooted there because right. I've been there in that way enough times.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that makes sense. And that's the thing. You have to have structure too. You know, that I'm a big believer in having that routine, you know, whether I'm, you know, at home or on the road, but one of the things too, you get familiar with some of the areas you go back to over and over again. But what I, you know, the reason why I enjoy so much, you know, what I get to do for a living is all these different communities I go to. It's never the same twice. And there's so much diversity within our tribal communities. That's the coolest thing. We have over 550 plus, you know, federally recognized tribes, and everybody's got unique backgrounds, unique histories, customs, culture, language, food. So it's a kind of an adventure just in that alone, because I'm constantly learning, constantly. And that's one of the things that makes what I do so enjoyable.
That is the surreal part of America, is the sort of bounty of it, I guess, is that it is so vast, and yet it's different. Its climates are so disparate, like all the different types. But also that, like, how many of the states have the same amount of diversity, if you know what I mean? It's like, okay, Colorado has mountains and sand dunes and deserts and plains. And then Texas has all of those things also, right? And like that America is so vast and enormous, but that all of the different places have their own diversity inside them. Like, of course we would have so many different kinds of people, and then also have so much sort of shared understanding as well.
Right. Yeah. It's microcosms. You know, when you start fine slicing those little things, every one of those little microcosms is another adventure in itself. You know, and like I said, even the tribal communities I work with or the different tribes, they have their own individual bands, just like my tribe does. And they're all unique. You know, they're all a little bit different. And that's what makes them so special. So it's a constant discovery and rediscovery, you know, experience that I go through every time I go out and do the work that I get to do, which makes it cool.
So what draws you to the Air Force Academy? How do you end up there?
Like I said, growing up at the end of a runway, I was always fascinated by aircraft. And as I got older, you know, that was a path that for me looked like something that I wanted to really pursue. I remember seeing my dad's patch, you know, for Strategic Air Command. And it's an iron gauntlet and it's holding lightning, you know, because they dealt with all our nukes. So it was always, you know, that those were imprints that were made in my mind. But it wasn't just that. It was understanding that my dad was making a contribution, that he was part of a team. He was part of a collective. He had dedicated his life in service to others. My mom did, too, as a career nurse. And so growing up with that kind of belief and that understanding, it was kind of a natural alignment. So I started applying myself as I was going through junior high, high school. I really started to apply myself because my goal was to go to the Air Force Academy. I wanted to fly. My parents ruined me at 13. I got an orientation flight in a Cessna and I was never the same. I mean, it was like, you know, pie in the sky became pie that I could see, smell, taste, and touch. It was right there in front of me because I sat in the front. And, you know, halfway through the flight, you know, I'm just looking around, just fascinated. And the pilot says, why don't you reach forward and put your hands on the wheel? And I went, what? He said, let's see what you can do. I said, man, I am 13 years old. He said, have you ever flown before? And I was like, no. He said, how do you know that you can't? Put your hands on the wheel. Let's see what you can do. And everything changed after that. I mean, it became reality. And as soon as we landed, I couldn't get out of my head. All I kept asking, how do I do this? How do I do this? And I begged and I pleaded. And I learned the power of persistence too. You know, don't take no as the final answer. And they finally gave up. They're like, look, you can do this, but you have to keep all your grades up. You have to stay out of trouble and you have to make all your own money. They thought that would be the deal breaker.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, deal. And so I started flying when I was 13, soloed when I was 16, got my license at 17. And my goal was to go to the Air Force Academy and be a pilot.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. It's funny how the things that we experience as a kid, like what our parents do, what they expose us to, and I imagine this is particularly common like growing up on reservations, where it's like, you either like, this is it, this is it for me, or you're like, I want the opposite of this.
Right.
Like,
right.
So I imagine in the military culture too, you're like, I want to do what my mom did or my dad did, or I want to do the opposite of what my mom did or my dad did.
Yeah. And both can be motivators, right?
Yeah.
Really powerful motivators. And that was the whole reason why my dad, you know, left home in Michigan to join the military, because he had an environment where he's like, I want to do the opposite. You know, I want to have structure and stability and be part of something bigger and have, be able to contribute, you know, take care of my family the way I want to. But yeah, on both sides of that spectrum, it can be a real powerful motivator. But that was my goal. You know, I wanted to do that. And by the way, I've always been a big fan of biographies. And I started reading it. The first one I ever read, I think it was 11, and it was Chief Joseph. Second one was Teddy Roosevelt. I've been reading them ever since, because I'm always fascinated what makes people tick or do the things that they do. And one of the things I go back to every time I read a biography is where somebody ended up as an adult, you know, that we read about, we hold in high esteem, started when they were kids. The things that they were exposed to, those early memories, those things where they, you know, had an experience and they thought, maybe I could do this, you know, and they started to follow that path. So yeah, there's a lot of, I agree with that 100%. That's a really powerful motivator.
There's a quote from one of Theodore Roosevelt's biographers that I like. It's basically he grew up sort of surrounded by books, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, Theodore Roosevelt is the story of a young boy who grew up reading about the great men of history and decided to be just like them.
There you go.
And the idea that, like, you know, you read these biographies, again, it's like one person reads these biographies and goes, that's impossible. I can't do that. That's so far from my experience. And then the other part reads it, the other kind of person reads it and goes, I could do that. I want to be like that. That could be me. And I think that choice, that perspective is hugely predictive as far, you know, if you don't think you can do something, if you're not inspired, if you don't think those stories are accessible, you're not going to do it.
Right. Yeah. You won't pursue that. And that's why it's so critical to, you know, that story we tell ourselves about what's possible is critically important to wherever we end up in our life and career. But it's also surrounding ourselves with the right people, you know, having those people in our tribe, you know, that encourage us, that cheer us on, that are there as a shoulder to cry on, a hand to hold, or sometimes a boot in the rear end when we need it. We all need that at times too. I know I have. But that is, you know, really powerful components on, you know, what allows us to become the best version of us, you know, down the pathway. But yeah, that story, and it starts in our minds, you know, can we do it or is it impossible? Either answer is right.
Yeah, I spoke at the Naval Academy last week, and I didn't go to a great college. My parents didn't have super high expectations for me. It's sort of just an ordinary middle-class kid. You go to college because you're supposed to go to college. And I was sort of trying to communicate to these kids just how absurdly rich the environment they're in is, as I'm sure you found at the Air Force Academy. I mean, you're surrounded by the best and brightest of your entire generation, of in some ways of the entire world, right? And either that inspires you and it makes you better, or it's intimidating and you just sort of avert your gaze from it. And you, same thing, I'm not like these people, I can't keep up. But I have to imagine that the people in your class have gone on to do some incredible things as well. I mean, that's a generation of leadership in you know, American and world events.
Yeah, and that's the crazy part is I think both things were true. I was intimidated, definitely, but I was also inspired.
Yeah,
because you show up, you know, when you come to a place like that, one of the military academies. I mean, they're, you know, it's an elite institution that, you know, handpicks people from different environments where they were the big fish in the small pond. They started out grow. I mean, these were, you know, straight A students, you know, varsity athletes, and so when you come into that environment, all of a sudden you're a little tiny minnow, you know, in a really big lake. But it gives you an opportunity to grow, because when you're surrounded by that, again, I had an elder tell me this years ago, and the older I get, the more I see it to be true. He said, our spirits are like sponges. They soak up whatever they're around. And when you're in an environment like that, where you're soaking up this incredible stuff, I mean, you can't help but benefit. And that's where I started getting to a place too, where I started even seeing glimpses there of there's no limit to how good we can become at what we do or who we are. I mean, the sky is the limit. Our own, you know, our own belief is our own governor. But being around people like that, that, you know, just when you think you're doing well athletically, you see somebody just blow it out of the water. When you're doing well academically, you see somebody just crush the test and you barely pass. I mean, it was this constant recycling of being reminded to stay humble and to keep working, keep grinding and see how good you can become, but always know there's going to be somebody better than you and you're always going to be a little bit better than somebody else. So that's not where the race is run. It's how good can you become at who you are and what you do.
Isn't that kind of a timeless cycle? I mean, when I talk to sports teams, it's the same thing. You know, I was speaking to a college football team, D1 program a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, okay, you wouldn't be here if you weren't the best where you came from. That's why they recruited you, right?
Right.
And then you came here and you're now not the best, right? There's a few freaks here or there that just are always the best. You know, there's the LeBron James who are just punching so far above their weight. But for us mere mortals, and that includes successful people, life is a continuous series of promotions that are also demotions, right? So it's like,
you succeed in some business and all of a sudden you are bumping into people who have been doing this thing for 20 years and they have more money than you, more experience than you, more contacts than you, right? You get promoted into leadership and suddenly you're surrounded by other leaders, right? Or you get into the Naval Academy and you're no longer the best from your high school. You're just one of 4,000 students who, you know, and how one adjusts to going from the best to having trouble keeping up, to me, is everything. Like, how quickly can you reinvent yourself, figure out this new environment? Like, how quickly can you swim once you've been thrown in the deep end? That is critical. And if ego is what got you there, that's when you're really screwed, because when you take that hit and suddenly you're struggling, that can send you into a spiral of despair.
Yeah, that you might not recover from. If you're going with that, you know, type of mentality, that can really doom us, you know, to a dark corner. So it really is. I mean, it's that I call it, you know, the Weeble Wobble effect. You know, like I had Weeble Wobbles when we were kids, and you know, the Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Those little egg shaped characters.
Yeah,
and and that's really what it comes down to, is creating that dynamic in your own life. You take the shots, you get hit, you get knocked off center. How fast do you come back up? I mean, that is really a life skill that can't be foot stomped enough on how critically important that is, especially in a dynamic and ever changing world that's moving. You know, speed of life is a speed of light, and we don't have to participate in all that chaos, but I'm just saying we are going to take our hits. And that's what I love about too, the Stoic philosophy, you know, the stillness, all the things that there's so much crossover in the Stoic philosophy with native traditions that I think that's why I've always really kind of been drawn to that. And so it's there's a lot to be said for humility, you know, learning as you go. You're going to have your butt handed to you in a basket more times than you wish you would. But that's also where we grow. I mean, honestly, I wish it wasn't like this, but we don't learn a lot when things are going well. We just don't.
Yes.
I mean, we're kind of cruise control, but we learn a lot. We transform in those moments where everything goes pear-shaped and things are falling apart.
Well, it's like, you know, when you're lifting weights that you can easily handle, you're not really growing. But it's when you're having to struggle with it that you figure stuff out. And it's like, getting into the academy is, you know, something that very few people do. But then you're in there with a bunch of people who have done that, right? Like, this is how it is with books, right? Like, how many people want to write books? How many people are writing books? Then how many people get book deals, right? This is small. It's a narrower funnel. But when you get there, you're not the only one. Like, you think about how many people signed a book deal the exact same day as you. There's dozens of people, right? Or hundreds of people. And now all of you are battling it out to see who really deserves it, right? Who's really got the stuff. And then the battle of like, who can do it sustainably over a long period of time, right? To me, that's how do you adjust, right? You make it to the NBA and now you're a rookie along with all the other members of the rookie class. And none of the people are like, oh, we're so glad you're here. We want to help keep you here. It's like, they want to get rid of you, you know, like they want to chew you up and spit you out. And can you adjust to that sort of new hostile environment? Yes or no. That is, in some ways to me, the essence of the kind of warrior ethos is like, can you adapt to an environment that does not want to adapt to you?
Right. And that really is the warrior ethos. It's, you know, digging into your deeper stuff and bringing it out in a moment where you need it the most. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that whole warrior concept that I talk about in the book, The Warrior Within, is all about service.
Yeah.
It wasn't about personal glory. It wasn't about, you know, what you could get. It was what you could do for somebody else. And when you talk about that contribution, when you move yourself out of the picture and say, it's not about me, it's about developing myself so I can be have a better impact with the people I serve, you have a different kind of alignment and motivation at that point to keep getting up when you get knocked down, to keep moving forward when you feel stuck. But that is, like I said, it's tough to get into that mode where every chance you have, when you go forward, you get into a bigger arena. Every time you think you got it figured out, it changes. That's really what it comes down to. And as long as you're okay with that, you can adapt to pretty much anything. I mean, that's the gift of the human mind, right? We can get used to darn near anything. whether it be on the good side of the scale or the bad, which is our blessing and our curse, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, the idea of being of service, because I think people think like the NBA, they think, you know, the military, they think Harvard, but all these elite institutions, it is a hostile, unwelcoming environment. But if you're in it, you know, like on reality TV shows, they're like, I'm not here to make friends, right? Yeah. If you come into it hostile, like it seems like that would be an attribute. But I feel like those sort of selfish, only in it for myself people are also pretty fragile and tend to get back what they give, you know, like that.
Right.
That must be strange. You're like, hey, I'm in this. I'm fighting for this thing against these, you know, unlikely odds, success. You know, I've worked so hard for this. And yet, if you're solely motivated by that, not some deeper purpose, some bigger contribution, not only does I think it would it make success be kind of empty, it's actually not a great strategy. Most warrior cultures are kind of that band of brothers thing.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're dealing with such a small picture when you're just coming at it from the self. You have such a small, you know, arena to work within. When you expand that out and say it's, you know, it's so much more than just me. It's trying to develop myself so I can be of better impact, contribute more to my team, to my tribe. That has a whole different feeling attached to it. That means when we do get knocked down, it's like, who am I not to get back up and keep moving? I'm not doing this just for me. Yeah, I'm upset. I'm mad. I'm PO'd. I'm hurt. I'm frustrated, but it's not about me. You know, this is the time where we got to keep moving forward. And that's why it's also critical to surround ourselves with good people, you know, for that reason, the ones who are also warriors beside us, behind us, in front of us. You know, that's one of the things I talk about in the book. Warriors never fought alone for that reason. You know,
no, as I was
alone, it's easy to hit the chicken switch. Sorry.
No, as I was preparing for my talk, I was reading about Wesley Brown, who was the first Black graduate of the Naval Academy in 1949. Mm-hmm. And I came across this story. So Jimmy Carter is, I think, 1 year ahead of him at the Naval Academy. He grows up in a small, rural, segregated town in Georgia. He's basically, you know, as primed to be as racist as one could be, given his backgrounds. And he sees sort of how the other cadets or midshipmen treat this guy who's having a really difficult time. And Jimmy Carter just sticks his head in his room one day and says, like, hey, man, hang in there. Like, I'm rooting for you. And that he was the only person in the entire Naval Academy that did this for this guy. And he talks about sort of how instrumental that was in actually making him hang in there. And I think about that because, you know, so often, again, we think of the sort of warrior as a thing within, or the warrior mindset as being this thing that's about us against the world. But it's really about the tribe. It's about the community. It's about what you do for the person next to you that not only helps them and makes the group stronger, but I think, you know, it makes you stronger also, because at least it imbues your cause or your success with some kind of significance or goodness that isn't just I'm trying to get ahead for me.
Right. Yeah, you're attaching to something much bigger. You know, you're drawing power from places that are way beyond you, you know, and that's the coolest part. It's like almost like you're channeling lightning at that moment of strength, of courage. You know, there's one of the things I talk about in the book, borrowed courage.
Yeah.
Which came from a story of a friend of mine who's a firefighter who, you know, I love that term, and that's why his story is in there. It's about being around other people who've been there, done that.
Yes.
And being able to borrow a little bit of that courage and confidence and trying it on like a shirt and then saying, okay, I think I can do this too. And that's how we grow into that next level, and then that next level, and that next level. And it never stops. You know, we never get there. That's the crazy thing is, you know, this is, you know, life is meant to be lived until we draw our last breath. And as we're, you know, breathing and have blood in our veins, we've got another opportunity to do it better.
Yeah, I feel like just like hatred or selfishness or cowardice, that's contagious. So is courage and positivity and
right.
connectedness and goodness. Like, and so what, I guess to me, that's a critical question. Also, what are you radiating outward?
Yes.
You know, are you contributing to things getting better, coming together, you know, people believing in something, or are you that sort of that negative force that's pulling those things in the other direction?
Yeah. And that's a choice we get to make. You know, yeah. We didn't choose the circumstances we're in. You know, the last couple of years have been nuts for everybody, really tough, heartbreaking at times, definitely fearful. We didn't choose the circumstances that we're in, but we always get to choose who we are and how we are as we step through moments like this. I mean, that's in our realm of control. And especially choosing to be, you know, the positive one or choosing to be the complainer, that's a choice we get to make every day too. But it's a critical one because it doesn't just affect our own, you know, well-being and strength, but it definitely does infect the people around us. I mean, it's one of the best ways, you know, when we talk about leadership by example, that's the only model that works. That's it. Honestly, everything else is lip service because do as I say, not as I do, didn't work for us as kids. It doesn't work for us as adults. It doesn't hold water. You know,
no, to me, that's the definition of stoicism is we don't control the circumstances, but we control our response to those circumstances. And like, honestly, we are much more constrained than we would like to admit about like the actions that we take, but our moods, our opinions, the story, that is always us, right? Even in prison, even as a POW, even in the midst of injury, like you're in a hospital bed. You don't control whether you get up and walk around, right? Like your biology, gravity, all these other things are acting on you. But whether you're hopeful or not, that's you. That is at the core of it. The last thing they can take from us is the story we tell ourselves about the circumstances that we're in.
That's it. That's it. And I'm kind of reminded of that by the people I've run into in my travels, the books I've read, the stories. Yeah, prisoners of war, Charlie Plum, somebody like that, who everything was taken away for years on end. That would have broke most mortal people. But the fact that he was telling himself something in his own mind about his experience, he was defining it. He wasn't letting the enemy define his experience. He was defining it for himself. And that is always in our control. And it's, you know, people who've been through tragedy or had accidents or, you know, terrible illnesses, incarcerations. I mean, you name it. It's we constantly get these reminders that that is where our power is. It's in this, not in the circumstances that we find ourselves in. It's in the way that we define them and what they mean to us.
Right. It's not much, but it's enough.
Sometimes that's all we need.
So what I liked about the book, you're sort of talking about it, you kind of start with like what a warrior isn't, because I feel like people have some very preconceived notions of what a warrior is. I feel like we chipped away at a few of them, but there is this kind of, just like, you know, people, when people hear the word stoic, they think something
emotionless robot.
Which is kind of similar. Like they kind of think that about a warrior, but they also kind of think like aggressive, you know, angry, you know, like ambitious. You know, there is that kind of stereotype of what a warrior is. What do you think? What are the ones that you find yourself pushing up against the most?
Just the Hollywood image. You know, we have totally morphed. You know, I always approach that warrior role and concept from a tribal standpoint. From our traditions, because it's very different than what we see on TV or in movies. It's not that Hollywood image, that, you know, that sweaty, chiseled, you know, character that's shooting bazookas and 8 million bullets and knocking down buildings, you know, and occasional surly looks at the camera. You know, it's something that's it's much deeper and more meaningful than that. It's somebody who is a willing servant, somebody who serves first, you know, leads by example, fights for something bigger than self, but at the end of the day is a contributor to their tribe, you know, that makes their purpose to be of benefit to the people that they serve. That was the whole role. But that, you know, what a fighter isn't, you know, we talk about that.
Don't you say that there's a difference between a warrior and a fighter?
Yes. That's what I was just going to say. Yeah. And those get mixed up too, because when we're a fighter, we're willing to use our time and energy and effort to achieve something that we basically are the primary beneficiary of. It helps us, but it doesn't really serve the collective or our tribe. when we become a warrior, we're using that same type of effort to achieve something for everyone, to have an impact, a positive impact for more than just us. So, you know, the fighter role can become really boxed in, you know, where we're just kind of like snarling in the corner and we're stepping on anybody who gets in our way. That's not what the warrior concept is about. The warrior concept is getting out of our own way so that we can continue to contribute and grow, even when we're scared, when we get the wind knocked out of us or get our teeth knocked out, we fall down, we're embarrassed, we're, you know, whatever may be going on, that we keep moving forward because we realize it's not just about us.
Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. It's always sensitive talking about these things, but Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/TDS. That's hims.com/TDS for your personalized ED treatment options. Hard mints are a chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with your healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80.
You know what's, I think, a great example of an illustration of what you're just talking about, the distinction between a warrior and a fighter? And it's in the new Showtime series about Uber. But I think Mark Cuban actually said it about Travis Kalanick, the founder of Uber. He said, you know, the greatness or the strength of Travis Kalanick is that he can run through walls, right?
Yeah.
And he says, but his fatal flaw is that he thinks everything is a wall.
There you
right?
go.
And so the problem with being a fighter, I feel like, is you develop this reputation, particularly early on, is like, I fight for what's mine. I won't be stopped. Like, I see it. You kind of start to see everything as an enemy or an obstacle or something to barrel through. But like, as you become more successful, actually collaboration, teamwork, avoiding pointless battles, that is actually more the name of the game. And you've learned this terrible lesson, which is like, head to where the action is. Yeah. And meanwhile, there's like an unblocked path right here that you can down and go even faster.
Yeah. And some people, they get addicted to the fight. That's the problem, is they start to lose the idea of the big picture. You know, really what you're trying to achieve here. And like I said, if you're trying to achieve a positive impact with a group bigger than yourself, you're going to have to take those other options and not look at everything as a nail and you've got one tool, the hammer, you know, to use every single time. That's not the case. If you're thinking bigger, you realize that there's times that we have to get out of our own way. We have to collaborate, coordinate, sometimes say we're wrong, ask for help, get extra resources, go outside of ourselves. And say that there's got to be a better way to do this. And, you know, we lose ourselves. I like I said, I think people get in that mode and it's hard to shut it off of, you know, anybody who crosses me is going to, you know, feel my wrath, you know, and you really start to become, you ruin your mission when you do that. You become the toxic one people are trying to avoid because, yeah, frankly, who wants to play with people like that?
Well, no, there's that expression, which I love. It's like, if everyone you meet is an asshole, you're the asshole. And it's like, if you're finding yourself fighting all the time, yeah, maybe you have to step back and go, am I picking these fights? You know, like, right, like if everything is difficult, if everything is a battle, like maybe you're the cause of that, not like your life is just stacking one difficult situation in front of you after another.
You got it. And that takes courage. Yeah. That takes courage to step up and go, maybe the problem is me. You know, what am I doing to contribute to these, you know, these messes that I keep stepping into? Is the world just full of messes, or am I the one creating it?
Yeah.
You know, so that takes a clear-eyed view of ourself, to really be introspective and, you know, realize that sometimes we're the one who have to change.
Yeah. And look, like a country and an organization, it needs warriors, but it also needs diplomats and statesmen, right?
People who, like,
if you're solving all your problems with your military, I'm meaning this figuratively, but also literally, like, you're probably not availing yourself of some less costly, less gruesome, you know, less bloody solutions to your problems. And I think,
absolutely,
that, so it's Travis Kalanick is just crashing into wall after wall and not questioning, why is this wall here? You know, yeah, why am I going this direction? What if I did this instead? And you can only do that for so long until you might become very successful, but it's probably not a happy form of success. And eventually it probably has the seeds of your own destruction in it.
Yeah, there's a cost to that. You can achieve so much with that, but I think it's not sustainable. I think there's a very deep cost to operating that way. You tend to start pushing people away. You start losing opportunities. It's bad for us. It leads us to burnout. Our anxiety is always at a high level because you're always in fight mode.
Yeah.
You're always vigilant, you know, constantly head on a swivel. Everybody's a threat. Everything's a problem, you know, and again, everything's a nail to be hammered down. And that can get you so far. And that's the dangerous part. You know, you can be functional enough until it all crashes out around you. And then you stand back and look at the debris field and say, what the hell happened here?
You know, I have a question for you. So, I'm sure you're familiar with the idea of monomyths, right? That we sort of, mm-hmm, all these cultures share these same ideas of the myth, you know, the hero's journey being one of them. Obviously, every culture has a warrior culture. Right. You know, whether we're talking about the Spartans or the samurai or the, mm-hmm, or the Greeks or the Romans or the, you know, the Western, you know, the pioneers of the West, and then obviously Native American culture. And there's a lot of similarities, clearly, right? But have you found that there is anything distinct or unusual or you think worth celebrating in the sort of Native warrior tradition,
yes,
that maybe we're not as familiar with?
Definitely a lot. And that's why I love that archetype, because yeah you're right. There's warrior cultures across, and I'm fascinated by those. I'm a history, you know, buff, constantly reading. But yeah, that the reason why our warrior culture to me has always been such a great model, whether you're Native or not, is irrelevant. And these principles can apply to whoever uses them. But because our warriors were fueled by love, by compassion, by commitment to their tribe. And like I said, it was all about service. It wasn't about personal glory. It was about serving and getting, you know, moving yourself out of the way to realize that it wasn't about you. It was about your tribe, that you were there to protect, to defend, to fight for, die for. So it was a model that was based on compassion and love more than anything, and a very deep commitment. So I love that part. There's a lot of other principles too that, you know, like I said, warriors never fought alone. Warriors were not bulletproof. I mean, that's one of the things too that I think is one of the biggest ways that we sell our warrior concept short,
yes,
is when we look at these icons like Chief Joseph or Crazy Horse or Sitting Bull as people without fear. And it couldn't be further from the truth. They dealt with pain. They dealt with fear. And they did what they did anyway, which made them even more of a, you know, real life superhero in my mind than if they were, you know, that fearless you know, never needed help from anybody type of personality. But we set it up as kind of like almost this myth that's unachievable. And so what I try to do in the book
is people make it, feel inadequate that they don't measure up to the myth. And it's not based on anything real.
Exactly. They struggled like anybody. They felt pain. They went through, you know, they made mistakes. They made stumbles. And so that's what I try to do in the book is make that whole idea very achievable by laying out those principles that help us become a better version of us in service to our tribe. But that's what makes, I think, our warrior culture very different than some of the other ones in history.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes from Hemingway, he says, you know, when people bring so much courage into the world will try to break them. And then he says, those who break can become stronger at the broken places, but those who will not break, the world kills. And I think, you know, if you think that you're sort of unbreakable or bulletproof, as you say in the book, like life will find a way to disabuse you of that notion quite painfully. And if you continue to resist and you think you're above or beneath asking for help or expressing vulnerability or weakness, like then you're doubly lost. Like, and that does seem to be a universal tragedy of a lot of the warrior cultures, is that inability to be like, I'm struggling, I'm hurting, invisible wounds, etc. Like, right. is like, how do you, it's like, actually, in meditations, Marcus Aurelius says, like, look, in the heat of a battle, you would never think twice about asking a comrade for help, right? If you stumbled or you needed, you know, to be held, lifted up over a wall. But it is tragic that afterwards, right, we don't want to avail ourselves of the same benefits of community.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, it's actually the highest expression of courage.
Sure.
It's to be able to say, I need help. Because, the goal is to still make that contribution, to still make a way forward. The goal isn't to preserve our own ego. You know, our warriors were very clear in their role. It was to feed and protect their people, not to feed and protect their ego. And when we get those things mixed up, you know, we set ourselves on this place where we start painting ourselves into a corner, and we think that asking for help or outside resources is weak, where we admit we don't know everything. You know, like, I mean, there are these crazy stories we tell ourselves about what we think we're supposed to be, and we get out of the way of actually becoming what we could be. And so I love that broken spot. You know, it's like, that's one of the things that sometimes we do have to be broken to let the new growth through. You know, whether it's you walk by a sidewalk and that, you know, concrete's broken, there's a flower shooting up. It wouldn't have happened if that didn't break, but unfortunately it's pretty painful to go through. Doesn't mean that it's the end of the story. Sometimes it's the beginning of a new one.
Have you seen that kintsugi pottery? Do you know what this
is? Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when you brought that up. Yeah. Which is amazing because they're basically taking something that is broken and making a more beautiful piece of art through that experience. You know,
more beautiful, like literally more valuable. Right. Like before it was a bowl made of porcelain, and now it is a bowl. Now it is a bowl with porcelain and gold or silver in it. Right. Yes. And I think we forget that, too, like the soldier or the leader or the husband or the father or the human being that has gone through something, asked for help, shared about it, learned from it, is a better person. Like for the group, is a more valuable person. Like you talked about the elder earlier who gave you advice, like an elder that had never struggled, never gone through anything, you know, hadn't been broken. I mean, how much could they teach you, right? Like they are valuable to you because of that, the struggles.
You're right. And how much real connection would you have to somebody like that?
Yes.
Yeah. That has never been through anything like that. There's no approachability there. You know, but those people who, and it's also setting a good example for other people too.
Yes.
I think that's what is needed more in the world, is be able to step up and be courageous enough to say, you know, we all struggle, we all stumble. I'm going through it too. I made this mistake. I'm recovering from it. You know, whatever it may be, because that ultimately connects you to people in a very deep or a much deeper way. Than just saying, follow me, I've got it all figured out all the time, every day, 24/7. Never made a mistake, haven't made a mistake since 82. And actually, that wasn't a mistake either. You know, like,
yeah, like
nobody can relate to those people.
When I say the obstacle is the way, it might not be the way for you, right? Like the fact that you went through something, it might not, the benefit of what you went through might not accrue to you. Like, you made a mistake and it blew up your marriage and you got a divorce, right? Yep. That isn't magically the best thing that ever happened to you. That's not what we mean when we say that there's opportunity in that.
Right.
It may be that somebody else can learn from your example, right?
Like,
and I think we so often, again, sort of selfishly think about, like, well, what am I going to get out of this? How is this good for me? But if you think about it as you're part of a hive or a tribe or a community or an organization, you're like, well, I'm going to note this down. So next time somebody else is going down this road, I have a roadmap for them.
Yeah. And you also, by the way, have a lot more empathy for your fellow human being when you go through pain and struggle as well, because that's the thing that we all hold in common. You know, one of the things, I love one of the clips that you had the other day that I was watching, saying that, you know, we should be happy that it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, embrace that, you know, and when I first heard it, I was like, I don't want to hear that. But it's so true, because that is where the growth happens, you know, and that's one of the things that I go back to. And I talk about it in the book too. Our traditional ceremonies were really, really hard, really rigorous. You know, I went through Sundance. I've been through Vision Quest 4 years. I mean, these were some of the hardest experiences I've ever had in my life. And you give up your food, your water, your shelter, your community for those time periods. And it's extremely difficult. But what you get in place of that is growth. You are transformed. Every one of those ceremonies I went through and endured, I was different afterwards because of it. And that's one of the things that you don't get when things are easy and things are smooth. But my gosh, when things are really hard and you're really struggling through it, that's when our best stuff comes out. And it's like a forest fire. Some trees don't even germinate their seeds unless they have the intense heat of a fire. The quote from Mildred Wittstoven, and I'm terrible with quotes, but I remember this one, is a clay pot sitting in the sun will always be a clay pot. It has to go through the white heat of a furnace to become porcelain.
Right.
I love that.
You know, what's interesting too, is that, again, to go to this idea of asking for help, and there's this kid's book I like to read to my kids called The Boy, the Fox, the Horse, and the Mole. And in one of the pages, the horse says, asking for help is not giving up. It's refusing to give up.
Wow. Right? Yeah.
But like, the irony is, like, you think like, oh, I don't want to burden these people with this. I don't want to make it their problem. I don't want to seem weak. Actually, I feel like some of the most significant sort of, and I'll say ultimately beneficial relationships in my life have come from that vulnerability. Like, I was struggling with something, I was going through something, and I reached out to someone who maybe I ordinarily wouldn't have talked to, or ordinarily wouldn't have broken through the ice of formalities or, you know, acquaintanceness through. And because I shared that thing, or because we worked through this thing, now we have a shared history that would be more beneficial than, like, they did me a huge favor, but our relationship is better than if I had done them a huge favor. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because they helped me, and now they feel an interest in, you know, my continued success. And that's what, like, elders are looking for, an opportunity to do that, but they can't give it to you if you are pretending you don't need it.
You got it. And then this is what's fascinating. I was just thinking about this as you were explaining that, is why people get so bonded. You know, like, I'll speak from personal experience, going through something like basic training or going through survival school that I did in the military. You get bonded to people so fast because everybody is in the struggle together.
Yeah.
And like you said it, or what Marcus Aurelius said, is in war, you wouldn't think twice of asking somebody for help or help over a wall. And that's those moments where you are just stripped down and you get out of your own way.
Yes.
And it's, again, one of those things you have to do to get through it. But then we get out of those moments, and then all of a sudden we keep everything behind closed doors and don't want to ever admit we need anything from anybody, you know? Yes. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book too, is because service providers is who I have worked with for, you know, almost three decades now. You know, people in healthcare and education and government service, people who are giving, giving, giving. And even when they struggle, they don't reach out for the help that they need. And it's one of the terrible things, because the intentions are noble and pure from what I've found through years of working with groups like this. But the execution becomes a hot mess, because when we stop asking for help, we start limiting how good we can become at what we do and who we are. The moment that we think we can't admit that we don't know all the answers is the moment we paint ourselves into a corner. So
yeah, no, that's a great point. It's like, if you're not, you're just missing a lot of opportunities for connection and growth. And ultimately it's kind of selfish, right? Like, so if you're struggling and you're not dealing with your shit and you're not trying, you know, you're too proud to ask for help, et cetera, ultimately, you are depriving the tribe or the group or the organization of you at your best, right?
There you go.
You know, like even you're just not at 100%, and that's selfish. But, you know, obviously, you know, if you take yourself out of commission, or, you know, worse, we see the rise in suicides and such, like, you are depriving the organization or the team or humanity as a whole something that would benefit it, because you're not willing or able to ask for this thing that I think you would be surprised to find they very much want to give you.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And life will keep teaching us that lesson until we get it. That's the thing that I found too. Every time you think, you know, like, okay, I'm asking for help, okay, now I'm going to go back to doing it on my own. And then you run into another one of those moments of, you know, anxiety or heartbreak, or things fall apart. You're like, okay, now I need to reach out again. But now you get to a point where you just start trusting in that process, that to be your best self, you can't rely on only yourself. We're all, you know, we all struggle. We all need help. We all need outside resources. And the more okay we are with that, the better we become, the stronger we become, and the more resilient we become.
Last question for you. Do you have kids?
I do. Two daughters.
How have you taught, other than example, how do you think about instilling the sort of the warrior tradition to your kids? How do you help them cultivate the warrior within?
Based on what we're talking about right now, that there's always going to be a struggle, that you need to take care of yourself, because the more that we neglect that part, you know, our power gets diminished. So it's taking care of yourself. It's surrounding yourself with good people, because we're all going to need that moment where we need that support, to remember that you don't have to have all the answers, that you'll figure it out in time, and that you keep finding a way to put one foot in front of the other and move forward. And they have had a lot of opportunities to you know, work on that. The last couple of years have been really tough with
sure.
You know, the pandemic and virtual school and all that. What's that?
How old are they?
16 and 21.
Wow. Okay. So they took the brunt of it as young adults. That, like, my kids are 5 and 2. So it's like, it's been hard, but they're also not aware of how hard and why it's so hard.
Right.
To get hit at 14 or at 19 would be so difficult, because you would know what's happening, but not fully have all the tools or the autonomy to respond how you might like to respond.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it has been a struggle, but, you know, it's one of those things that they constantly inspire me, because they're finding a way forward. I mean, that's one of the things we've talked about too. And I've also gotten that in the book, is, you know, we can surrender, but we never quit.
Yeah.
You know, surrender is when you stop doing the thing that you keep doing because it's not producing any more results. And sometimes you're the problem, like we talked about earlier. Quitting is when you just throw in the towel and walk away. You know, and as long as you don't do that, you always have another opportunity to keep moving forward. So, and they're doing it, and they make me proud, because they've done a lot in the last couple of years that have blown me away.
Well, and I've got to imagine this sort of Native American tradition, we've been talking about tradition, is, you know, it's long been an oral tradition. It's stories, it's, you know, myths, it's ideas. Has that been part of how you've approached being a parent, is like, sort of carrying on the same things you were talking about with your grandmother, like teaching you those things or ideas that, you know, who even knows how far back they reach, but the sort of process of repeating them is how we keep the values going.
Yeah. I'm a huge proponent of the oral tradition. And I don't tell my girls necessarily the traditional stories that our elders tell, but I am a huge proponent of story. I always have been. Like I said, I don't remember most of what my thermodynamics class was like at the academy, but I remember stories my grandma told me when I was six. Right. And so I've tried to instill that with my daughters of telling them stories of struggle and victory and defeats and, you know, all these different moments in my life that hopefully will help them during theirs. And that's really what it comes down to, is, you know, trying to get another piece of the puzzle to make somebody else's journey a little bit smoother than maybe ours was.
And that probably goes back to you being a little kid reading biographies too, right? Because what is a biography but the epic story of a great man or woman and what they went through and how we might apply that in our own circumstances.
You got it. Yeah, because if they did it, maybe I could too. Yeah, that's always the takeaway, right? When you see what these folks went through. But I love reading their
stories. Conversely, right? I don't want to do what they did because that worked out very badly.
That too, but it's all learning. You know, it's all learning, and that's a good thing. But it's definitely inspiring to see, you know, people we hold in high esteem did not have an easy route. And that's why I'm such a fan of biographies. It's like we look at these people, these men and women as heroes, and they did heroic things. When you look at their story, they come back to us so quickly because they have been through some of the same things we're going through, or a lot worse. And so we look at their story with a kind of a new perspective and a new appreciation that life's not always going to be easy, but we can always find a way to keep moving forward if we don't quit.
Yeah. You talked about Sitting Bull or Crazy Horse. It's like they were still human beings who had human problems, right? In addition to X, Y, and Z, plus a million things we can't even conceive of.
Right.
And you I think that's what I love about history, is going like, oh, people have always been people and we have always been struggling with the same things.
Yeah. And if we embrace that, we can move forward. You know, if we resist it or think life's unfair, everybody's out to get us, you know, that's where the progression stops. It's like, this is part of being a human being. You know, life's a challenge. It always will be. Till we draw our last breath, you know, we're all in the fight. And we can do it well and struggle well, or we can kind of throw in the towel or paint ourselves into a corner. So,
well, and I think, you know, the idea of there being a tradition, you know, it was earlier the idea of Theodore Roosevelt and, you know, he wants to be like these people. The idea that we get to choose, Seneca has this great line, he says, we can't choose our parents, but we can choose whose children we want to be. Right. So like choosing like, hey, I belong to this warrior tradition, even if my parents weren't into it, even if I don't actually know how far back my ancestry goes or whatever, like even if I'm a first generation this or that, like to be like, no, like I'm buying into the American story, like the American dream is mine. Right. Or I'm buying into the Air Force culture or the literary culture or, you know, wherever you happen to live, whatever you identify with. I think the idea of going like, I'm part of this warrior tradition and these are the values that I'm going to follow. I think if you can give your kid a broad swath of those to choose from and they can pick the one that's theirs, I mean, to come from a tradition is such an incredible thing. And I think part of the tragedy of a lot of, I think, American life these days is that we all kind of feel disconnected from a tradition because we don't really know what it is, right? And we don't feel like we're the descendants of this or that. We're just kind of adrift, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the reasons I wrote the book too, is I wanted to make that, like I said, accessible because this concept is so powerful and so useful. And so beautiful, in my opinion, that, you know, it transcends race, it transcends age or gender or stage of life. It's a path that's there for anybody willing to follow it. But it's a great one to be on because, like I said, it comes back to contribution. It comes back to, you know, really using our assets that we've been given and keep continuing to develop those so we can have an impact in the world and make it a better place. I know it sounds like cliche, but I mean, if we're not here to do that, why the hell are we here at all?
I love it. No, that's right. It feels a little like lame,
But like, where would we be if people weren't willing to be vulnerable enough to be like, no, I'm trying to make the world a better place. Like, you would not want to live in a world where no one was trying to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So as long as we acknowledge that, we've got that, you know, that bright spot in front to shoot for. We've got a target. But yeah, who wants to live in a world where like, oh, we'll just see what happens, or, you know, at least it's not as bad as it used to be. I mean, just, I don't know. We've all been around people like that. I feel like my spirit gets sucked out, you know, when you're around people like that for too long.
I totally agree. Well, I feel my spirit feels very revived in this conversation, and congrats on the book. And I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Ryan. Greatly appreciate it. Honored to be here.
Thanks so much for listening. If you could rate this podcast and leave a review on iTunes, that would mean so much to us and it would really help the show. We appreciate it, and I'll see you next episode. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Guy Raz's How I Built This is a podcast where each week he talks to the founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you hear these entrepreneurs really go into their story. And Guy is an incredible interviewer. He doesn't just dance around the surface. He has real questions because he himself is an entrepreneur. He's built this huge show and this huge company. In a recent episode, they talked to the founder of Liquid Death, that crazy water company that's become this billion-dollar brand. Follow the show on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. And for a deep dive in daily business content, listen to Wondery Destination for Business podcasts with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.